There, it describes there that apart from the 64 items of deity worship, there are some other items which are part of deity worship. One part of deity worship is studying the scripture, swajaya, self-study. And because by studying the scripture, when we worship the deity at home, in the fire japya, or in the temple, we have the proper consciousness. So it's actually an integral part of deity worship. So we're actually worshipping the deity of Radha Ballabha here. And other things are Sadhusava, worshipping Tulsi, honouring Prashad, and honouring guests. They're all part of deity worship. So, to me, it's good to wear the clothes, if possible. I mean, you don't have to. I'm not, you know, enforcing it. But to me, it's a good understand that you understand we are doing something that actually is not different from deity worship. And at least the teacher should. So, you'll never see me, because I consider this to be non-different from if I walk into that deity room and ring a bell. I do not consider there's any difference to what I'm doing here. And it's an integral part of... because, you know, what happens, therefore, by that process of deity worship, when done completely like that, when you walk out of the deity room, all the other aspects, Sadhusava, Srimad Bhagavatam, Tulsi, worshipping guests, means you never actually leave the deities. So your consciousness remains fixed on those deities, whether you're in the deity room or not. Like that. So it's good to, I was just explaining, you know, just here with Srimad Bhagavatam, it is an aspect also of deity worship. And it is nice if the devotees can. I know that sometimes they may come from work or something, that's fine. But if you're coming, you know, if it is possible to change into Vaishnava attire, it's good. It's not necessary because a lot of devotees are in good consciousness anyway, but we do get some of the younger devotees come in, and just to help them, it's good. So at least the teacher, so at least I'm going to do it. I'd prefer the devotees did it, but it's not a hard one for us. So because sometimes, you know, it's difficult. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're continuing our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is Canto 7, Chapter 5. And we're going to finish this chapter. And we have heard how, you know, after trying to kill Prahlad Maharaj, or wanting to kill Prahlad Maharaj, he was again given back to his teachers to be trained up properly in politics. Yeah, so at this stage, so far, just to summarise what we've heard, Prahlad Maharaj did not carry out the orders of his teachers, for he was always engaged in worshipping Lord Vishnu. As described in this chapter, Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Prahlad Maharaj even by having snake by him and putting him under the feet of elephants, yet he was unsuccessful. Hiranyakasipu's spiritual master, Sukracharya, had two sons named Sunda and Amaka, to whom Prahlada Maharaj was entrusted for education. Although the teachers tried to educate the boy, Prahlad, in politics, economics and other material activities, he did not care for their instructions. Instead, he continued to be a pure devotee. Prahlad Maharaj never liked the idea of discriminating between one's friends and enemies. Because he was spiritually inclined, he was equal toward everyone. And once upon a time, Hiranyakasipu inquired from his son what was the best thing that he had learned from his teacher. Prahlad Maharaj replied that a man engrossed in the material consciousness of duality thinking, this is mine and that belongs to my enemy, should give up his household or life and go to the forest to worship the Supreme Lord. When Hiranyakasipu heard this from his son about devotional service, he decided that this small boy had been polluted by some friend in school. Thus he advised the teachers to take care of the boy so that he would not become a Krishna conscious devotee. However, when the teachers inquired from Prahlad Maharaj why he was going against their teachings, Prahlad Maharaj taught the teachers that the mentality of ownership is false and that he was therefore trying to become an unalloyed devotee of Lord Vishnu. The teachers, being very angry at this answer, chastised and threatened the boy with many fearful conditions. They taught him to the best of their ability and then brought him before his father. Hiranyakasipu affectionately took his son Prahlad on his lap and then inquired from him what the best thing was that he had learned from his teachers. As usual, Prahlad Maharaj began praising the nine processes of devotional service, such as Shravanam and Kirtanam. Thus the king of the demons, Hiranyakasipu, being extremely angry, chastised the teachers, Sunda and Amaka, for having wrongly trained Prahlad Maharaj. The so-called teachers informed the king that Prahlad Maharaj was automatically a devotee and did not listen to their instructions. When they proved themselves innocent, Hiranyakasipu inquired from Prahlad where he had learned Vishnu Bhakti. Prahlad Maharaj replied that those who are attached to family life do not develop Krishna consciousness, either personally or collectively. Instead, they suffer the repeated birth and death in this material world and continue simply chewing the chewed. Prahlad Maharaj explained that the duty of every man is to take shelter of a pure devotee and thus become eligible to understand Krishna consciousness. Enraged at this answer, Hiranyakasipu threw Prahlad Maharaj from his lap. Since Prahlad was so treacherous that he had become a devotee of Vishnu, who had killed his uncle Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasipu asked his assistants to kill him. The assistants of Hiranyakasipu struck Prahlad with sharp weapons, threw him under the feet of elephants, subjected him to hellish conditions, threw him off from the peak of a mountain, and tried to kill him in thousands of other ways, but they were unsuccessful. Hiranyakasipu therefore became increasingly afraid of his son Prahlad Maharaj and arrested him. The sons of Hiranyakasipu's spiritual master, Sukracharya, began teaching Prahlad in their own way, but Prahlad Maharaj did not accept their instructions. While the teachers were absent from the classroom, Prahlad Maharaj began to preach Krishna consciousness in the school, and by his instructions, all the class friends, the sons of the demons, became devotees like him.
From that section,
yes.
In 5.11,
yeah.
5.11, where Prahlad Maharaj mentions about that the distinction between friend as someone is my friend or someone is my enemy,
yep,
is created by the illusory energy.
Yep.
But Prabhupada mentions something in the Prabhupada in the second paragraph. Just at the end, although everyone is a servant of the Lord, one Vaishnava servant, because of humility, sees another servant as his master. So, understanding of this, of the master, begins from understanding of the spiritual master. Can you please tell something about that?
Okay, so I'll just look at the exact text of that purport. So servants of the Supreme Lord, all living entities are one, but a Vaishnava, because of his natural humility, addresses every other living entity as Prabhu. A Vaishnava sees other servants to be so advanced that he has much to learn from them. Thus he accepts all other devotees of the Lord as Prabhu's masters. Although everyone is a servant of the Lord, one Vaishnava servant, because of humility, sees another servant as his master. Understanding of the master begins from understanding of the spiritual master. So that's what you want to explain.
So, because I'm really confused whether here understanding the master is referring to the ultimate master, which is Lord Krishna.
Well, I'll just quickly scan this page.
So the sentence understanding the master begins from understanding of spiritual master. That is actually referring to Lord Krishna as a master, or because previously Prabhupada is saying that Prabhus as general devotees as masters.
Yeah, well, so so when it says, although everyone is a servant of the Lord, one Vaishnava servant, because of humility, sees another servant as his master. Understanding of the master begins from understanding of the spiritual master. So, the first point is that in the same way we were discussing about deity worship, that proper deity worship means you see the deities everywhere. That's proper deity worship. Not that we do some, just like we've just had celebrate Prabhupada's appearance day, Vyasa Puja. At least on one day we should be able to appreciate the presence and the glories of the spiritual master. But you see in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada, sometimes when he gave the Vyasa Puja offering to his godbrothers, he chastised them quite strongly that you are not following the instructions of your spiritual master, who, you know, instead of, he didn't want us to just maintain ourselves by keeping the centre so we could be nicely maintained. He wanted, and keeping Krishna consciousness to himself, he wanted Krishna consciousness, you know, to be spread all over the world. He particularly wanted that because that was Lord Chaitanya's desire. Now, because Prabhupada was following that instruction, he always felt, although he had less association with his spiritual master than any of them, practically, he always felt that he was feeling the presence of his spiritual master more and more. They felt that their spiritual master was absent. So much so that they no longer needed to follow those instructions because he's not there to enforce them. So Prabhupada's mentality was the same as what Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj instructed Bhakti Siddhanta, that, you know, one should see the spiritual master everywhere, in all circumstances, in all things. So whatever happens to us in the course of the day, we understand that that is the arrangement of the mercy of the spiritual master. From the time we wake up to the time we go to bed, that is seeing the spiritual master. So, so first of all, we understand the spiritual master. And of course, Therefore, even in someone who may be junior to us in Krishna consciousness, they're a servant of Krishna, but still they may be junior. They need to learn a lot from us. We can help them, you know, that. But still, because we see the spiritual master everywhere, we also see the spiritual master acting through them as well. Just as, I think there was someone from the military said to Srila Prabhupada and a librarian that he should write books because they're permanent. People tend to throw away articles, magazines, and they instructed him, write books because people tend to keep them, they're more permanent. He took that instruction from those persons that his spiritual master was acting through them. Why? Because the same instruction he had given was coming again, being reinforced. So therefore, you know, to recognize, to see the mercy, the presence of the spiritual master in others, if he's not present, but, you know, in some circumstances, we know that he has given us this instruction, he has given us so many guidelines, and here it is coming again, or prompting us in the same way. Oh, that's the spiritual master again pushing at that. If we don't, can't appreciate, the service that the spiritual master is engaging everyone in, then how can we tell whether they're, properly engaged in the service of the Lord or not? So, for instance, we see here that, although everyone is a servant of the Lord, one Vaishnava, because of humility, sees another servant as his master. So one aspect of that is that he can see his spiritual master acting through, others. And, so, for instance, the instruction of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is the same instruction as of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that, everyone should be taught the precepts of the Bhagavad Gita and then gradually the Srimad Bhagavatam and follow that with a proper understanding and proper guidance. And that is how we serve Krishna. So we see them as servant of Krishna, and we may see them as very sincere, that although they're very neophyte, we appreciate that for their situation there's, just like Prahlad, we appreciate, well, for a little boy, very, very, very advanced. It's described that Prahlad Maharaj is held more dear to Lord Narasimha than even the residents of Vaikuntha, including his personal associates like Visvakshana and Lakshmi. Now, why is that? Part of that is because for him, in the spiritual world, it's natural for them to be, always serving Krishna. To do that in the material world actually takes a huge effort of surrender and risk. And therefore, the same thing coming from someone in a more difficult position is considered, well, that's the same as what they do, is considered there's extra credit. You see? So when we see a very neophyte devotee, when we see some, sincerity in Krishna consciousness, or, they're doing something wrong, we say, well, gee, for where you're situated, that's quite remarkable. Like that. In all humility, a devotee may think, well, I've been a devotee for so many years, and when I remember back, I wish I had that sincerity, this new devotee's God, or, you know, at that stage. I mean, I've certainly, you know, tried to mature in different ways, but I appreciate, you know, if he's like that in his situation, then by the time he's done 10 years, of, you know, like I've done, he'll be, you know, so much more advanced than me. So, you know, there's so many different ways we can, in humility, you know, appreciate, you know, even a very new servant of the Lord. And we can also appreciate the presence of the, you know, the spiritual master acting through. But really, you know, understanding what is service to the Lord, we have to understand that from the spiritual master, because he's properly engaged in service. So we have to know what is service to Krishna but through the spiritual master. Then when we see that present in anyone to some degree, then we can understand, you know, what is service. Otherwise, we may think that someone is doing something very nice in a way of service, and it's not really service. It's not something condoned by the spiritual master. So the spiritual master is a perfect example, and he is reflected in all places and all circumstances. So,
so Prabhu, basically, you mean that if the spiritual master message can come from anywhere, dream can be reinforced from anywhere.
So, yeah, yeah. The spiritual master's presence is properly, should be seen at all times, in all places, in all circumstances. So what is happening now, this is the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. This is his presence in the form of his mercy, that this is now happening. This person has come. I was just saying to Nirmala, you know, I couldn't find my keys. And so then I walked up to the car, but as I was coming back, I walked into a devotee who has been trying to organise a ceremony with me. So had I been in here, she would have left at the time. She wanted to see me, but somehow it didn't happen. But so I bumped into her. So we were both, it was a fortunate meeting, because we actually had to chat about certain things, and everything got finalised. So I thought, oh, you know, very good. I'm glad I went to find my keys. But yes, you know, I can tell you an interesting story about, you know, just to verify the presence of the spiritual master. You know, my first spiritual master, Bhavananda Prabhu, you know, fell away from that position. But, you know, for some time he was properly situated. And therefore, for some time, he had the ability to, you know, properly carry out the duty of a spiritual master. But then he fell away from it. During that time, when he was properly situated, when I got married here to my first partner, had a car accident, so it ended up in the separation because she got some damage to the brain. But we used to go out on Sankirtan again. So I used to live still upstairs in the Brahmachari Ashram, probably for years, wherever, in the temple, somewhere, either here, Perth, or somewhere. I was always in the ashram. It was like that in those days. You get married, it makes no difference, you're still in the ashram. And, for years. And anyway, so we used to get to see each other. Really, the only way we get to see each other is to organise to go out in Sankirtan together. So one day we were sitting in the car, and, you know, we got into a discussion. So we're newlyweds. We've only been married for a few weeks. And but instead of getting out of the car and doing Sankirtan, we just talked for hours and hours and hours. And it sort of did, you know, it really... We probably should have, you know, had a chat and got out and do Sankirtan. And it went on and it went on and on. It went for hours and hours. In fact, it was going to take up the whole day. It was almost like we weren't going to get out of that car at all. So as we were sitting in the car, we were parked on like a main road, and they were doing some construction. And they put up these boards you know, to protect the pedestrians from debris coming onto the footpath and on the road. So what happened was the whole side wall of these boards collapsed, and the corner part fell onto the bonnet of the car. And there was this huge smashing sound and just crunching on the bonnet. And when we both looked forward, staring into the window was the post of our spiritual master. It was on the corner. It was just like, you know, just like, it was right there. It was doing, oh, there's Gurudev. Yeah. And we thought, oh, you know, Gurudev, he knows what we're doing. We got to get out and preach. Another time, you know, funny incident happened was that I was on Sankirtan, and you know, I had my roller paints, I was doing shop to shop, and then as I walked past a, like a building, you know, and in the front window they had the televisions. So on the television they had the sound coming out the street, and they were doing a David Bowie concert on the television. So I stopped to just have a glance to see, you know, oh, what are these karmis into? But the funny thing was, I ended up watching the whole concert. As I stood there for an hour, I thought, gee, you know, yeah, this guy's really good. Anyway, so when I got back to the temple, you know, I felt really bad. And there was a magazine where, you know, they used to put out, and the guru, you know, your spiritual master used to have one of his lectures. I thought I'd better sit down and purify myself by reading one of my spiritual masters. And in the article, he was preaching against David Bowie. I thought he caught me out again. So, you know, yes. So the spiritual master is present. We shouldn't try to trick the spiritual master.
But, does this understanding come with time, or do we have to make attempts to see it everywhere? It's not necessary that you would...
Well, understanding that that's how we should see things, that helps, because then we think, oh, that's how I should see things. So then we practice, and then as we practice, then it just does become more and more. But if we don't even know that that's how you're supposed to see, and of course you never even try to practice, so... Yeah. So it's... But it's very helpful, because when, you know, when you start looking like that, then you perceive, oh yes, you know, that rather than me reacting to this situation on its face material value, now all of a sudden I feel the presence of my spiritual master, so my behaviour is adjusted considerably. You know, you tend to adjust your behaviour thinking, well, my spiritual master... As you behave and your spiritual master is there, then you tend to begin to behave like that all the time, like that. And therefore our dealings with others become very sweet and, you know, proper etiquette. And also we deal with people as if the spiritual master is watching us. So, you know, we sort of check ourselves, you know, on what we're doing. And just one more incident on that, you know, that... you know, sometimes as devotees we can become very familiar with our friends, and, you know, because we're sort of, you know, knocking around with the devotees, you know, on a daily basis, having a joke and this, that and the other. You know, so sometimes someone may call us and we go, ah, like this. Anyway, one time I was at a Ratha Yatra concert, you know, I was really absorbed in the Ratha Yatra concert, and someone kept calling me from the side, and I was thinking, like, I just want to see the... And I finally went, huh? Oh, that was my spiritual master. And I thought, caught out again. So, you know, so then now when people call me, even from that day, you know, it doesn't matter. I, you know, try and turn around with a bit of a smile that I'm happy to see you. You know, you're not there annoying me. So, yeah, it adjusts, you know. The way you do things, and that's good. Because after all, the spiritual master is present. I was just talking with my second eldest daughter Friday. So that was yesterday. Lose track of time. And she was telling me she's born in 84, so that makes her about 33 or something. Because she's a nurse, she works as a nurse in the emergency department down in Monash Hospital or something. You know, there's a lot of time when you know, you're studying, and you know, even Prabhupada, when he was studying, literally put his Radha Krishna deities in a little box and packed them aside. You know, he felt very guilty, but it sort of had to be done. So sometimes the children, the devotees, do that. You know, she went to Gurukul and everything. But she's just telling me all the realizations, because now that she's sort of nicely situated, she's downloaded the, without me suggesting or anything, the e-book, Bhagavad Gita, probably, and she's reading. And every now and then she rings me up and asks me, what does this mean, like this and that. And then she was telling me that she can remember, she's got this, she's a very psychic person, and, you know, very... you know, has quite a mystical nature to her. But she was telling me that she remembers a dream when she was 3 years old that she'd never ever told me, and she never told anyone. But she, when she was reading the Gita, it came back to her. That when she was 3 years old, she was sitting. She dreamt that she was sitting in this big wooden rowboat with Srila Prabhupada, and other devotees were rowing the boat across the ocean. And Prabhupada was sitting with her, and he just had this big smile on his face, and he just kept talking to her about Krishna and telling her all these different things. And he was really, really happy. And she said he just talked to her for hours and hours and hours like that, and she just really enjoyed it. But, you know, she can't remember all of it, but she knows you're talking about Krishna. But she, it just come back to her, you know. So, you know, again, I was just thinking, you know, that you don't quite realise how the guru is, you know, with even the children, you know. As that they may not see it as an adult. She now understands the significance. That's, you know, a wonderful thing, you know. And but they may not mention all the different things that are going on. But so, you know, the spiritual master is present. Even we don't see his presence. So... That is one aspect that you know, we're seeing everyone as the servant of Krishna, you know, and in one, and here, although we're seeing them as the servant, we're also seeing them as the master, meaning in some way or another they're reflecting the fulfillment of the desires of the spiritual master. And that's what Prabhupada did. He saw that, you know, this person is, you know, helping me or contributing, you know, to fulfilling the desires of the spiritual master at that. So therefore seeing them in that respect as master. And also because we always take the position of the servant, we understand that, you know, gee, with this sincerity and this nice attitude of this person, if they keep going at that stage, you know, they will make so much more advancement in this life than what I've taken advantage of to make. And therefore, I, you know, oftenmost, so even though, you know, there's a little time separating, but, you know, the possibility is there that they could be going back to Godhead in this lifetime. You know, if you look at someone and you think, oh, that's, well, there's potential there. This person could go back to Godhead in this lifetime. You know, all respects to you. I may take me many lifetimes. So it's good, you know, it's good practice. It, you know, in many different ways we can do that. Yeah. A nice verse, isn't it? Yeah, it's a nice understanding. But, of course, you know, we wouldn't think in these terms unless someone who has that transcendental vision even presents it for the first time to hear it. Otherwise, it just wouldn't register for another 500 lifetimes.
Do we also become dear to the Lord, because we are practicing the most difficult position? Or?
Yes. Yeah. That's what we learn from Prabhupada.
Like, following the footsteps of Prabhupada, not being, not yeah. like Prabhupada, following the footsteps.
That's right. Following in the footsteps of that, and that's what Prahlad shows us. That, you know, he takes that position. He's just following in the footsteps of Narada Muni, and therefore, you know, in the Bihad Bhagavatamrita again, you know, when Narada Muni approached Shiva, and he said, "Oh, you think you're getting some, you know, great realization of Krishna's mercy and the devotee by seeing me? You go and see Prahlad." And he says to him, "Do you think that Krishna gave his so much mercy to Banasura because of my prayers to Krishna? Do you think Bali Maharaj got so much mercy from Vamanadev, you know, because of his activities like this?" Because when you look at it, so then he analyzes it. You'd have to, you know, I won't go into the whole thing, but he analyzes it. There was a lot of deficiencies, you know, in their activities. But then he's pointing that actually because, you know, they're dear to Prahlad Maharaj, they've attained some mercy from Prahlad Maharaj, and Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, because Prahlad is so dear to the Lord, that's why they got such extremely significant benedictions, way beyond what they should have, because of their following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, or being somehow connected, you know, to his mercy like that. So if we follow, do the same thing, then, you know, not act like Banasura, but but take shelter of Prahlad Maharaj, then yes, that is the process. And therefore, just hearing about his pastimes, hearing is very, very powerful. If you hear about the great Vaishnavas and the Lord's mercy upon them, Krishna gives so much mercy, so much benediction just by hearing. You know, and if you take the time to hear properly, attentively, with the purpose of, you know, following in your behaviour and helping others to follow the, you know, consciousness and the behaviour of Prahlad Maharaj, then, you know, you get so much mercy for preaching or redistributing that, you know, that teaching that to others, both by your example and by, you know, presenting the philosophy. So, yes. Yeah, and you know, therefore, another aspect of always seeing yourself as a servant is, you know, we understand that, well, you know, here's some devotees coming along to the movement. They sort of appear to be in a junior position, but, you know, when they do something, a very significant surrender in this day and age to Krishna, it's something, you know, very, very wonderful. Whereas we don't have that credit. Somehow or another, I've stumbled into the association of very devotees who are very dear to the Lord, and they've gave me some mercy, and so somehow or another I'm nicely situated. But here's someone who's actually, you know, literally putting some nice effort in their own surrender, you know. So that's what, you know, Krishna was seeing in Prahlad, that, you know, here he is in the material world surrendering, you know, from a very young age, and he gave him credit. And Prabhupada also, you know, just like, you know, here, we're all pioneers. You're pioneers as students, you have to put up with a teacher like me. I'm blessed with so many wonderful students like yourselves. But, you know, we're pioneers, you know, it's sort of an educational system in motion, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of faults and, you know, think, you know, we did what we can. But still, we may get more mercy than people, in one sense, the people follow us who everything's set up for them, because we really have to do it the hard way sometimes, you know. You know, eventually the facility that we are, like here, we're like, you know, we walk in here. Like, have we got the room this week? You know, you know, is there any tables and chairs left? You know, has anyone tied it up? Is there a microphone? Is there, you know, this? But you know, eventually there'll be, you know, whole rooms set up almost permanently for teaching with, you know, people who get training how to use, you know, the PowerPoint and this and that and the other, and everything will be done. So we get extra credit, you know, even though we, you know, there may be some inconsistencies like that. And also, you know, the interesting, you look back at the early devotees, you know, like Prabhupada's devotees, you know, they're wearing Bratty bed sheets, and, you know, they didn't have a dress, and, you know, they got the big beads, and, you know, so many, you know, strange things, but how much credit are they getting? Okay, you are the first ones, there's nothing here for you, you know, you're not going to get any credit from anyone. There's no money, there's no luxury, there's no comfort, there's no big temple, there's no, you know, practically you don't have books, there's no tapes, lectures, so Krishna is going to give them extra mercy, extra credit. You know, look at the people, the devotees who go to Bombay now to do service, compare them to the ones that went and sat in that field. With the snakes and the mosquitoes and, you know, dysentery, how much mercy they're going to get? They may have had so many faults compared to, you know, they may not have done their bhakti shastri and training and deity worship and this, that and the other. Krishna's overlooked all of that. You know. You know, there's one thing I presented last week, although I don't know if it fell on back Debbie. I presented that to the, we're discussing the educational system and how we want to have, you know, we're certainly tightening everything up and making everything uniform and upgrading everything. But, you know, I did make the point that, you know, you can't penalise what people have done in the past without facility, without, you know, so many different things. We used to have situations here where, you know, devotees would come in the middle of our class and just tell us to get out and go in the back room and stomp back and forth with things and intimidate devotees. You know, so, here, the proper Vaikuntha mentality is to look, you know, that this devotee, they've done service without facility, without proper things, so much more credit. I could not do what you've done, you know, like that. So, in one sense, if we look at devotees today who have all the educational facilities that we have, and then you look at the devotees trying to serve in extreme circumstances without that facility, trying to educate, trying to understand and come to the Krishna conscious realizations, they've done it without any of this help. Like when we did, the fifth canto on, the science of the universe. I was pointing out that when we first read that canto, we didn't have books by Sataputta and, what was his name, the Maharajas, Dhanavir Maharaj, and, you know, so many others who had literally helped us to understand how they correlate with science. We didn't have any of that. It was just like, you know, the moon's, past the sun. We're thinking, okay, well, Prabhupada says it, that's good enough. You know, there's, like from the West, you know, there's, Ram was helped by monkeys and, you know, birds that fly through the universe, and they, you know, they eat elephants or something, and they lay their eggs and they hatch in space, and, you know, Prabhupada said it's in the back. That's it. There's just no question. As Prabhupada said it, that's it. That's all we had. Now, that's hard. You know, you've just got to push all your doubt. You can't entertain any doubts for 2 seconds. I'm not going to spend 2 seconds of my day doubting Prabhupada. Somehow or another, I have faith that in the future this will be explained to me. But for now, I'm not going to allow my mind to doubt Prabhupada for 2 seconds. That's not easy. So, you know, therefore, One may look at today's scholars as more advanced than the previous pundits. We didn't know anything. Or, you know, Prabhupada's disciples, they didn't know anything. But their realization, you know, and that's like, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to the illiterate Brahmana and, you know, said, "You're reading the Bhagavad Gita." "Oh, I don't know what I'm reading, I'm illiterate." "Why are you crying the text?" "Oh, I'm seeing the picture on the front." Just from the picture, there's Krishna Arjuna. I remember that in the early days, I used to spend hours just looking at the pictures and the realizations I got. I used to lock myself in the room upstairs, Prabhupada's room, on a Sunday, like 64 rounds, and I just put a picture. I'd go through the Bhagavatam time and I'd meditate on, you know, the pictures and like that. And that's where so many realizations come, just from looking at the pictures. So, yeah, so, you know, it's a really nice meditation, isn't it? You know, when you sort of look into it, that ability to see someone as, well, that's advanced. That's advanced, you know. That's good. That's Vaikuntha. That's Vaikuntha atmosphere. And that's how Krishna is looking at each of us. So we should never feel inadequate, because Krishna is always giving us so much mercy for doing whatever we can under the prevailing circumstances. And in years to come, in 10 years to come, 20 years to come, you can bet your bottom dollar that the devotees that come, they cannot do what you're doing now. You know, they will need more facility. You know, more explanation, more time, more gentle approach. Still, Krishna will give them some extra credit for something. Yeah. Alright, so let's so that's a nice meditation for the beginning of this class. And so then, of course, you know, that came up because, you know, that was the beginning of Prahlad Maharaj's replies to the teachers. Yep. Defeating their discussions on, you know, trying to see this one as friend and this one as enemy. He's presenting the Krishna conscious platform, and that's part of the Krishna conscious view. Everything is absolute. On the Prabhupada would sometimes say, on the spiritual platform, the spiritual master and the student are on the absolute platform. Although they actually have those roles, they're on the absolute platform. You know, especially if they're, you know, if one is properly situated as a disciple, one is properly situated as a spiritual master on the absolute platform. So you can't, in that sense, there are proper etiquettes, but really you can't distinguish between Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. You know, they're on the absolute platform. And yet one is full disciple, one is full spiritual master. When someone is perfectly engaged as a disciple, then they are qualified as a spiritual master. And in that way also we see one as a master. So this is the equal vision of Prahlad Maharaj. On the spiritual platform. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with the living entity because of his devotional service, one becomes a pundit and does not make distinctions. So he goes on to explain to the seminal brahmanas, the so-called brahmanas, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So he's explained that the same Supreme Personality of Godhead that's putting people into illusion is the same person who can take them out of illusion, such as what he's done for Prahlad Maharaj. But he's faultless in his position as a devotee of the Lord, because that has happened, you know, by the grace of the Lord and Narada Muni, without his separate endeavour, really. Uh, So, anyway, the teachers thought, oh, you know, time to get out the stick and, you know, give Prahlad, show Prahlad Maharaj, we've tried the other methods, now we're going to have to beat him. So, you know, they chastised him, they threatened him, and of course, well, let's see, this is where we're up to. Right, is text number 18, is that it, where we left off? Yeah. That Sanandra and Amaka, the teachers of Prahlad Maharaj, chastised and threatened their disciple in various ways and began teaching him about the paths of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. That is the way they educated him. Yeah, we read that one in there. We heard about Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya means gold. Kashipu refers to soft cushions and bedding. Alright, so sense gratification. And Prahlad refers to one who's always joyful in understanding Brahman, similar to the word Prasannatma. So, now, a materialistic person, of course, even in their religious activities, their attempt is for improving sense gratification. Prabhupada pointed that out. And then, of course, sometimes for the benefit of the teachers and the brahmanas, so-called brahmanas and religionists, they see this as a lucrative business. People are interested in shortcuts to help them in their material life, and so they give them talismans and blessings and mantras and so many different things, you know, for producing gold and what have you. So, and then of course that turns people off religion and spirituality, and this has been going on from time immemorial, going back to even Prahlad. So generally people are not interested in liberation, the fourth, the real end of religion, economic development and sense gratification. And bhakti is a very advanced form of liberation, and so that is even less understood or accepted. And Prahlad explains that later. So, text 19, after some time the teachers Sunda and Amaka thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in the diplomatic affairs of pacifying public leaders, appeasing them by giving lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in cases of disobedience. Then one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. So Srila Prabhupada explains in that purport there's a successive process of trying to pacify public leaders. So, you know, sometimes there's rivalry against the government or the king, as we describe it here. You know, we might try first one of these four methods and then, you know, the other and the other, and if everything fails, and throw them in jail or put them before the firing squad. Argument ad baculum. So, argumentum ad baculum. Who knows, what is it, Latin? Argumentum ad baculum. What does that mean? Is all... When all arguments fail, kill them, something, punish them. So Hiranyakashipu, when he saw that his child had fallen at the feet at his feet and was offering obeisances as an affectionate father, he immediately began showering blessings upon the child and embraced him with both arms. A father naturally feels happy to embrace his son. And Hiranyakashipu became very happy in this way. Narada Muni continued, "My dear King Yudhisthira, Hiranyakashipu seated Prahlad Maharaj on his lap and began smelling his head. With affectionate tears gliding down from his eyes and moistening the child's face, he spoke to his sons as follows. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear Prahlad, my dear son, O long-lived one, for so much time you have heard many things from your teachers. Now please repeat to me whatever you think is the best of that knowledge." Yeah. Well, let's hope Prahlad doesn't cop the punch.
So, Prabhu, this love that Hiranyakashipu was displaying, it changes so easily, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's because he's hovering on the mental platform. That sounds good to engage. Yeah, so therefore it's obviously conditional on sense gratification. Hiranyakashipu said, yes. So in this verse, Hiranyakashipu inquires from his son what he's learned from his guru. Prahlad Maharaj's gurus were of two kinds. Sons of Namaka, the sons of Sukracharya, in the seminal disciplic succession with the gurus appointed by his father, but his other guru was the exalted Narada Muni, who had instructed Prahlad when Prahlad was within the womb of his mother. Prahlad Maharaj responded to the inquiry of his father with the instructions he had received from his spiritual master Narada. Thus there was again a difference of opinion, because Prahlad Maharaj wanted to relate the best thing he had learned from his spiritual master, whereas Hiranyakashipu expected to hear about the politics and diplomacy Prahlad had learned from Sunda and Amaka. Now the dissension between the father and the son became increasingly intense, and Prahlad Maharaj began to say that what he had learned from his guru Narada Muni. So it's very interesting that I sometimes try to appoint, explain this point when I do an astrological chart. And, you know, especially when you're doing a chart for a child, you know, sometimes you have to tell them all these planets are going to cause trouble. But it's okay, you know, stop crying. the men, especially. I see some hope, there's a little bit of hope there. Actually, you know, here is an exalted planet. And so the thing is that as Prahlad, because he's a liberated person with control of his mind and senses, not motivated by material conditioning, he just accepted the best influence. There's two influences there. But he accepted the most auspicious influence and just followed that, even though the other influence was there. And that's how, because therefore people say that astrology is not for devotees, and yet my point is that actually only a devotee can take advantage of astrology. Because a conditioned soul, by their conditioning, will follow a particular influence by their conditioning. Only a person with control of their mind and senses, fixed up, steady in devotional service, can say, I'm not going to act according to my conditioning and accept this influence which is there in my life. I'm going to take this auspicious influence. And that proves that actually astrology has very little value for someone who's a conditioned soul, and has a complete value for someone who's a liberated soul. I'll put that in my book when I write it. So, it's a fact. And, you know, I learned the fundamentals of Western astrology So a very elderly person who had studied it from his father when he was about 5 and his father had studied. Although it was Western astrology, they removed anything that was speculative as far as they could and just dealt with the fundamental principles of astrology as far as they could, and all the mathematics, which I still apply to the Vedic astrology. But one thing he told me was that you'll find that more than 95% of people will not be able to follow your advice that you give astrologically. That was his father's impression of a lifetime, his impression of a lifetime, that you give the thing and people can't follow it. And that was my... And I used to do, for a business, astrology, and I sort of stopped dealing with too many non-devotees because it was a little bit futile because, unless you... And then as I become, more... understood its preaching application, then I understood that, I have to give them some introduction into Krishna consciousness, give them some things to do, attract them towards Krishna consciousness as the remedy. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to follow anything I say because they're conditioned, and they'll just follow that by conditioning. See? So, Prahlad has done this as well, because he's a liberated soul. He's just accepted one influence, and because he's not conditioned, he's not forced to accept the other for any material purposes. So Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia and pastimes of the Lord, remembering them, serving the lotus. So I just got to say one more thing. You'll only hear that in this class. I have to put that in because there are some things that we do here that are exclusive. Just always remember that. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So there's a little purport that accompanies that. Fifteen pages. What I'm going to do, I'm going to come back to it. Okay, let's finish, and then we'll come back to it. So we go up to text 25. After hearing these words of devotional service from the mouth of his son Prahlad, Hiranyakasipu was extremely angry. His lips trembling, he spoke as follows to Sunda, the son of his guru Shukracharya. O unqualified, most heinous son of a brahmana, you have disobeyed my you have disobeyed my order and taken shelter of the party of my enemies. You have taught the poor boy about devotional service. What is this nonsense? It's funny, isn't it? He's experiencing transcendental ecstasy. So in this verse, the word asara, meaning having no substance, is significant. For a demon, there is no substance in the process of devotional service, but to a devotee, devotional service is the only essential factor in life. Since Hiranyakasipu did not like devotional service, the essence of life, he chastised Prahlad Maharaj's teachers with harsh words. 27. In the due course of time, various types of disease are manifest in those who are sinful. Similarly, in this world, there are many deceptive friends in false garbs, but eventually, because of their false behavior, their actual enemy becomes manifest. Purport, being anxious about the education of his boy Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu was very much dissatisfied. He immediately regarded the teachers as his enemies in the garb of friends. Yeah. So, Roga Patakina Eva refers to a disease which is the most sinful and miserable of the conditions of material life. Disease is the symptom of the body of a sinful person. So everyone gets old, but it's not necessarily sinful to get old. It just, you know, everyone takes birth. But sinful, you know, so it's interesting, you know, amongst the birth, death, old age and disease, excessive, miserable disease stands out amongst them. Murderers of Brahmins are later afflicted by tuberculosis. You know, and that sort of genre of disease. Like that. Drunkards become toothless. So, you know, sometimes we see people come in from St. Kilda, you don't even ask them where they live, you know, here. But you don't have to ask them what they do. I sit in the park and drink, you know, but you can see, you know, the teeth are gone. Drunkards become toothless. Those who have stolen gold are afflicted by diseased nails. And I assume that means the feet and the hands. And sinful men who have sexual connections with a wife of superior afflicted by leprosy and similar skin diseases. You know, there's a lot of venereal diseases also, you know, which are manifested in the skin. So, you know, it's quite a suffering condition, but, you know, it's interesting here that certain diseases are recognisable for certain karmic debts, you know, and astrologically that shows up as well, that, you know, when certain planets are afflicted, then certain illnesses will be there, and that's because of a certain karmic debt and these things, you know. So you can literally, you know, refer to the Manu Samhita, have a look at the astrology chart, and you can see a person's previous particular sinful activities, you know. I usually keep it quite general, you know. I usually say there's a karmic debt. I don't like to go too far than that, but you can. The son of Sukracharya, Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master, said, "O enemy of King Indra, O king, whatever your son Prahlad has said was not taught to him by me or anyone else. His spontaneous devotional service has naturally developed in him. Therefore, please give up your anger and do not unnecessarily accuse us. It is not good to insult a Brahmana in this way." Sri Narada Muni continued, "When Hiranyakashipu received this reply from the teacher, he again addressed his son, Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu said, 'You rascal, most fallen of our family, if you have not received this education from your teachers, where have you gotten it?'" And the purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains, the devotional service is actually Bhadra Sati, not Abhadra Asati. Abhadra Sati is used in the actual verse. In other words, knowledge of devotional service can be neither inauspicious nor contrary to etiquette. Abhadra, that's inauspicious. Asati, bad or contrary to etiquette. To learn devotional service is the duty of everyone. Therefore, the spontaneous education of Prahlad Maharaj is supported as auspicious and perfect. Vlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclination toward Krishna are never aroused either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Now, so there's Srila Prabhupada points out because there's a lot of things that go on in the name of Krishna consciousness. Krishna Prabhupada tackles that issue because there's no question of Krishna consciousness unless they've actually been favoured by the process, the association of devotees. So-called politicians, erudite scholars and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes, but their understanding of Krishna will not yield them any profit. That's interesting, isn't it? So they're reading Gita. And even they may be teaching it. And Prabhupada is saying that despite that, it will not yield them a profit. I mean, we generally understand that anyone who reads Gita and, you know, that they so much benefit there. Here Prabhupada says not yielding them any profit. Because it's not Krishna's words, it's something else. Because such politicians, philosophers and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially, for them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible. They'll not become Krishna conscious as a result. Nor will they make others Krishna conscious. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, 1855, Bhakti Mama Vijayanati, only through devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is. So, devotional service means preaching what Krishna said and hearing what Krishna said. The so-called politicians and scholars think of Krishna as fictitious. The politician says that his Krishna is different from the Krishna depicted in Bhagavad Gita. Even though he accepts Krishna and Rama as the supreme, he thinks of Rama and Krishna as impersonal because he has no idea of service to Krishna. So he thinks of him as impersonal because there's no bhakti. Thus, his only business is puna punascha vita chavanam, chewing the chewed again and again. So they never rise above the material platform. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world with their bodily senses. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grihabratta, those whose only aim is to live comfortably with the body and the material world, cannot understand Krishna. The two expressions grihabratta and chavanam indicate that a materialistic person tries to enjoy sense gratification in different bodily forms, life after life, but is still unsatisfied. In the name of personalism, this ism or that ism, such persons always remain attached to the materialistic way of life, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.44, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment material objects, and who are bewildered by such things, a resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So Prahlad, what Prahlad said, you know, we're going back millions of years, really, aren't we? What Prahlad said millions of years ago, Krishna has said exactly the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. It is consistent, exactly consistent. Those who are attached to material enjoyment cannot be fixed in devotional service of to the Lord. They cannot understand Bhagavan, Krishna, or his instruction, Bhagavad Gita. Adanta gobir vishatam tamishram. Their path actually leads toward hellish life. As confirmed by Rishabdev, Mahatsevam daram mahobamukte. One must try to understand Krishna by serving a devotee. The word Mahat refers to a devotee. Mahat manastu mampata. So this quote from 9.13 of the Gita. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So again, what Rishabdev said, also a long time ago, is the same thing Prahlad Maharaj said. We see that later on here in Prahlad's instructions. And the same thing the Gita is saying. People, the Jains follow Rishabdev, don't they, to some degree? They accept him as a deity, but really they're not properly following, because that is one of his main instructions. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service 24 hours a day. As explained in the following verses, unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Hiranyakasipu wanted to know where Prahlad had gotten this Krishna consciousness. Who had taught him? Prahlad sarcastically replied. So now Prabhupada paraphrases it. My dear father, persons like you never understand Krishna. One can understand Krishna only by serving a Mahatma, a great soul. Those who try to adjust material conditions are said to be chewing the chute. No one has been able to adjust material conditions, but life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. Unless one is properly trained by a Mahatma, or unalloyed devotee of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's understanding Krishna and his devotional service. And therefore, in the next verse, he goes on to say, persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man, attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men, guided by another blind man, miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruit of labour, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. So as Prabhupada said, since there must always be a difference between demons and devotees, Hiranyakasipu, when criticised by his son Prahlad Maharaj, should not have been surprised that Prahlad Maharaj differed from his way of life. Nonetheless, Hiranyakasipu was extremely angry and wanted to rebuke his son for deriding his teacher, a spiritual master, who had been born in the Brahmana family of the great Acharya Shukracharya. Hereditary gurus or spiritual masters have been accepted everywhere since time immemorial, but Prahlad Maharaj declined to accept such a seminal guru and take instruction from him. An actual guru is Kshatriya, one who has heard or received perfect knowledge through Parampara, the disciplic succession. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj did not recognize a seminal spiritual master. Such spiritual masters are not at all interested in Vishnu. Indeed, they are hopeful of material success. Generally speaking, practically everyone is unaware of the spiritual world. They do not know that beyond the material world is the spiritual world. Unless one is a devotee of the Lord, one cannot understand the existence of the spiritual world. Gurus, teachers who are simply interested in this material world are described in this verse as under or blind. Such blind men may lead many other blind followers without true knowledge of material conditions, but they are not accepted by devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. Such blind teachers being interested in the external material world are always bound by the strong ropes of material nature. So, you know, so he's pointing out in a very strong, powerful, and yet somewhat indirect. As Prabhupada says here, he's saying, you know, persons like you can't understand Krishna. It's almost like he's, you know, there's a statement of the situation at hand for everyone to hear, for those who become aware of that, you know, conversation, that they will benefit. Or what did Hiranyakasipu Bhute say to Prahlad? Or what did Prahlad say to his father? Oh, this is what he said. It's like, let me just explain, you know, as well as answer the challenge for the benefit of the universe, let me clarify the entire situation. It's not just about me and my father. This is an eternal principle, like that anyone who, you know, as we're even here in this conversation, let it be understood. And then not only challenging his father, but then challenging the brahmanas, his so-called gurus. They're blind men. Anyone who follows them, they're also blind. Unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined toward materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that materialistic education expands the influence of Maya. Such an education induces the conditioned soul to be increasingly attracted to materialistic life and to stray further and further away from liberation from unwanted miseries. One may ask, why highly educated persons do not take to Krishna consciousness? I can hear you all asking that question. The reason is explained in this verse. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide, fully Krishna conscious spiritual master, there is no chance of understanding Krishna. The educators, scholars, and big political leaders, worshipped by millions of people, cannot understand the goal of life and take to Krishna consciousness. For they have not accepted a bona fide spiritual master and the Vedas. One cannot, quoting the Mundaka Upanishad, one cannot become self-realized simply by having an academic education, by presenting lectures in an erudite way, or by being an intelligent scientist who discovers many wonderful things. One cannot understand Krishna unless one is graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only one who has surrendered to a pure devotee of Krishna and taken the dust of the lotus feet can understand Krishna. First, one must understand how to get out of the clutches of Maya. The only means is to become Krishna conscious. And to become Krishna conscious very easily, one must take shelter of a realized soul, Mahatma, whose only interest is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.13. Therefore, to end the unwanted miseries of life, one must become a devotee. Here's this verse that we sometimes quote. Prabhupada said the most important verse in the scriptures. Yashe deve para bhakti ta deve tata guru tashaite katita hyata prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls of implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Now this creates a problem that what you have in this day's day and age is the religions of the world now having to live together with each other. So we're having to live with Muslims. The Muslims are having to live with Christians. In Victoria, we're living with a lot of Hindus. A lot of Hindus. You know, I think in Victoria especially, isn't it? More so than anywhere in Australia. Now, therefore, you know, you go to the Western suburbs, the Hindus are going to live with the Muslims. They've got the mosques. They've got schools. We don't have any. But we've heard that, and I think it comes up again, Prabhupada says somewhere in one of these other purports, 99.9%, you know, people in this world are materially, their goals are materialistic, you know, they're not spiritually inclined. And that includes, you know, the scholars of religion and the leaders who see religion as something that may improve material life or what have you. But in the Gita, you know, Krishna points out that all religious processes in the Vedas and those scriptures which are corollary to the Vedic knowledge, so when there's something within the Muslim scriptures or the Christian scriptures or Hindu scriptures which you know, correlate to leading one to bhakti, transcendental, to reviving the eternal loving relationship of the soul with the Supreme Soul, that we accept that. We don't. Now, I was reading this to Sudhir Krishna this morning. This was the verse. And text number 26.
Prabhu, can I ask a question? The same connection. It is from elsewhere.
Yeah, ask a question.
In many of the Vaishnava songs, they keep saying, first, we have to develop humility, and then we have to love all everybody. Then only we can chant the holy name properly. So, it's as if a qualification to even saying. So even from us, like you're saying here, that Prahlad Maharaj says, you cannot understand the about Krishna, about the Lord. So, but here in many of the Vaishnava songs, they're saying you need to chant the holy name properly. You need to start loving people. So now, normally people don't have that. So that means initially when they're chanting the holy name, there are a lot of anarthas there. So the thing is, they're not able to chant properly.
Hmm. So the answer to your question is exactly what I'm about to read, exactly part of this discussion. So, in this verse, Bhagavad Gita, text number 26 in the third chapter, Krishna says, Na buddhi bidam janiye jnanam karam sanginam josyat sarva kamini vidvan yukta samacharam. Let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant who are attached to fruit of action. Now, we're hearing in this chapter that 99.9% are attached to fruit of action. And here Prahlad Maharaj is, speaking that the goal of life is devotional service. And then, Nimala, Krishna is saying that, there seems to be some fruit of activities in one sense that we may sometimes recommend, just developing some moral principles and what have you in order, as a prerequisite to bhakti. So, how do we tie all these factors together properly? In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, Vedais cha savera aham eva vidya. That is the end of all Vedic rituals. All rituals, all performances of sacrifice, and everything that is put into the Vedas, including all directions for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal of life. So even what may appear to be material activities, pious activities, charitable activities, and developing good qualities, they're all meant for understanding Krishna. But because the conditioned souls do not know anything beyond sense gratification, they study the Vedas to that end, to the end of sense gratification. Through sense regulations, however, and this is what you're talking about, Nimala, sense regulations, humility, service to other living, one is gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities of understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. Now, the instructions in the Gita quite often are presented so that those on the platform of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, the principles, the essential principles that they're following, are also presented in the Gita, but with Krishna as the centre. So therefore they can't criticise the Gita, because what the Karma Yogis are following, they can't say, oh, we're following it. No, what you're following is the same as in the Gita. The only difference is Krishna has added Krishna to everything, is the goal of everything. But Krishna is telling us, don't disrupt people from developing good qualities of humility and, charitable activities and, different things like that that help control the mind and senses and develop good quality and develop good social structure. And don't disrupt their minds. Just show them how they can do that and dedicate all of that to Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. Although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities, still a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of the Lord without waiting for rather Vedic formula. For this fortunate man, there is no need to follow the Vedic rituals, because in direct Krishna consciousness, one can have all the results simply following the prescribed duties of a particular person. So therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, here it recommended you follow the process of bhakti, Krishna. Krishna said, become my devotee. Always think of me. But not in an unauthorized way. How's that? Do it by following the principles laid out in the science of bhakti. Thinking of me in a devotional way, and that devotion becomes purified by following the regulative and then the spontaneous platform of bhakti. So become my devotee. Always think of me, but by following the process of bhakti yoga, which is Prahlad Maharaj is recommending here. And a slightly developed Krishna conscious may be directly engaged in bhakti. For this fortunate person, there is no need to follow the Vedic rituals. So one may be engaged in hearing chanting. Hearing chanting means that we hear about Krishna and then we go and speak that to others. Like that. And where Krishna says, as you were saying, that one should about other living entities, you should
have love for all others, and
work for the welfare of other living entities, also Krishna says in the Gita. So a devotee understands, or this person understands the principle of bhakti, that if they go out and help them become Krishna conscious, that's the best welfare work. So Lord Chaitanya said. But if they don't understand bhakti, they still understand the principle that they have to come to that process of understanding. That is, that has to be there. If they can't directly come to bhakti because they don't understand it, then keep following the regular principles. Keep working for the welfare of other living entities, and gradually you'll get there. But if you understand the importance of bhakti, that is the highest welfare, then put aside everything else and just do bhakti, hearing and chanting, preaching. And one who preaches Krishna consciousness, there is no one more dear to me than he or she. So, you understand that? So, one, we are not to disrupt the minds of others, because we understand that all the regular principles are helping people to come to Krishna consciousness. So, but because the leaders of the world, the politicians, the scientists, and they don't understand that, therefore, when they see people following rules and regulations which are contrary to their sense gratification, then we've got a problem. So, for instance, one of the big issues in Australia and around the world at the moment is the banning of Muslim women from wearing the burqa. Mm. It is very disturbing to the sense gratification of people in other countries who are not. But actually, it's one of their regulative principles. Like many other things that they do, which helps persons on their particular level of God consciousness elevate. Without their level of regulated principles, for instance, Prabhupada would mention that, in the Muslim scriptures it mentions, don't have sex with your grandmother and things like that. Okay? It's a regulative principle. Now, you don't necessarily, in other societies, you don't have to say that. You don't have to write it in. We don't have it in extra devotion. it's understood that someone was doing that. Too many. It had to be mentioned in the scriptures. A bit embarrassing. Can you leave that one out, Muhammad? We don't want people to know that. But, those regular principles have to be followed. And for people in different parts of the world, different cultures, different levels, Their birth is not accidental in that part of the world. Those regulated principles are helpful. But if such a person, a Muslim person, by further examination of the Quran, understands that they should not engage in sense gratification or anything but the service of the Lord, they would understand, well, I can't actually rape women just because they're not wearing a burqa, you know, even if it's my own grandmother. So if they come to that level of that I'm actually the servant of God, so naturally I can't do those things because that's not service of anything except my senses. Because that's not there, they can't follow that process of bhakti. Therefore, it's better they follow some regulation. I was watching something about Bangladesh. I was mentioning a documentary about Bangladesh that they, you know, there's a big Muslim population there. They have a problem. More women are raped in that part of the world, in Bangladesh, than practically anywhere else in the world. Rape is a common affair. It's something like 1 in 4 women will be raped, and raped many times, before they, end up protected by some husband or something. And they were showing on the documentary, they're asking the police officer, and he was saying, he was also Muslim, but he was saying that, well, it's not right, but the Quran does say that they should stay in the home. So if they come out of the home and they're not covered, then they deserve to be raped. So, there we see an eagerness to have sex, and the discrimination is obviously lost. So, I would advise my mother, if you're walking past someone like that, cover yourself up. Because they're just going to rape anyone. There's a problem there that the governments have to be very careful of interfering in regulatory principles that may be helpful to ultimately come to a level of a pure-hearted service to God and an ability to control the mind and senses otherwise. And the Muslims would have to also come to the understanding that that criteria is there because they're actually having problem controlling their sex urge, which is not necessarily, for according to the Bhagavad Gita, one gets a higher taste by a very nice culture of spiritual life, eating prasadam. Hearing the pastimes of the Lord, and so many things, singing and chanting and dancing, that they can overcome that. So actually the Krishna consciousness movement can help them in that regard, to because ultimately they're going to have to come to the realization that that regulation is there because it was considered that they have such a major issue with their sexual appetite, and that to live in other societies where that may not be the case, they may have to adjust, upgrade the higher taste they're getting from their religion in order to associate with people from a more elevated consciousness. It's just like, in the when Yudhisthira performed the Rajasuya Yajna, So at the end, they all had it was massive, you know, to achieve that. He did it once. Did he do it three times? Something. He did it. It was just what? Just once.
Before the
what?
Rajasriya once. Ashwamedha three times.
So, you know, they just celebrated. You know, what a task they had to, you know, so many opposing armies like Jarasandha. So they had this big celebration and they, you know, throw butter and yogurt, not lumps of butter, it's probably soft, you know, and curd and, you know, so many different liquids and, you know, honey and things at each other. And literally they're in ecstasy. And of course, you know, the hair of the women loosened and some of their garments became a bit loose and their belts fell off and, you know, some of the parts of their bodies became exposed and things because of the liquids and everything. But as mentioned there, that because they're on such a transcendental platform, that there was no lust. No one was, you know, just the men and women were mixing very freely. And all etiquette was sort of thrown to the wind because there was such a spiritual ecstasy. And you see that sometimes with kirtan. You know, sometimes you have kirtan and then men and women go wild, and sometimes the women are banging into the men and bowling them over, and you know, so many like things that ordinarily you wouldn't see. No one cares about it because they're having this big festival, see? So there's a higher taste where, you know, the usual etiquettes are not there. But there was one person who couldn't, you know, he was still lusting over Draupadi. She should have been my wife, like that, and he was envious. So he couldn't. So he had to adjust. He was in the, you know, the society of elevated people. He had to literally adjust. He had to come up a notch in his consciousness in order to associate with him. Otherwise, it wasn't possible for him. So it's not that everyone there had to adjust down to jury dance level. So there has to be a little give and take at some stage between people in Western countries understanding that we should be careful not to denounce their regulatory principles, which may be helpful. And then from the Muslim side, understanding that these people don't need to follow that regulatory principle and they somehow control their sex urge better than the men in Bangladesh, where rape is, you know, higher than anywhere else in the world and we're following the Muslim rule. Huh? So how are they doing that? You know, so there has to be a little bit of give from both sides like that, with the ultimate understanding being, but if the goal is material sense gratification, then for the sake of sex life, you know, neither the Muslims will understand and nor will the you know, the non-Muslims understand. So unless both of them come to the point where the religious principles that they're following, or, you know, perhaps not required to, are based upon achieving a relationship of service to the Supreme with pure love. Unless that is the understanding, they will never ever come to an agreement. If, as long as it's based on sense gratification, then they will never be able to resolve that problem. And therefore, and that is a big problem, a big problem in the world. But what you see here is actually the answer to the problem is in Srimad Bhagavatam. That as soon as both the, you know, people from all different religious walks of life understand that the religious principles that they're following are meant for the ultimate, to become a pure servant of the Lord in Bhakti Yoga, they can then have common ground to resolve the situation. As long as it's based on their sense gratification versus our sense gratification, it will never be solved. How important
is Shrimad? What is our center identification?
What's that?
What is our center identification? That is still modeling Krishna.
Oh, you know, our sense gratification is that, you know, we may have to modify our behaviour as well. You know, if you're in the association of people who are struggling with their sex desire, you know, we may have to modify. You know, just like, you know, so that we somehow find some common ground. We make it easy for them, and you know they make some adjustment for us. We make it, you know. We can't just, you know, it's like saying to a hungry child, you know, control your hunger and then wave a cake in front of their face. Yeah. You know, there's got to be some compromise, doesn't there? You know, the child's having trouble. He's a bit greedy, eating too much and sweet. There's got to be a little bit of a modification. you know, how we can work together. Modification, allowances, that's what, you know, I mean, Krishna's saying, you know, but whatever you do, don't just go disturbing people. That they're following, you know, regulatory principle, which is part of your religious, and then just don't disturb them, unless, if you're going to modify something, you modify it in this way, you help them to appreciate bhakti, pure love of the Supreme, doing things for the pleasure of the Supreme, not for one's senses. If you can let them come that way a little bit, then modify. And to the degree that they're willing to come that way. Otherwise, if that's not possible, don't disturb for the sake of disturbing, because, you know, those regulatory principles, or those not bhakti, they are meant to ultimately bring them to that. They have to follow some regulation, something, you know. And if they're very disturbed on one level, then they may have stronger regulations than someone else. So, but there has to be discussion on these points. But you know, we are not allowed to just, you know, that they're attached, okay, we have attachment, and just denounce them and disturb their minds. Because their regulatory principles are actually meant to bring them to bhakti. They're set up by Krishna himself. You know, Muhammad is a Shaktivesh avatar who guides them. You know, Jesus is a Shaktivesh avatar who guides them. Buddha is a Shaktivesh avatar who guides them. Generally, Prabhupada's method was to, when he spoke with people from any religion, he would ask them what they were following, and then, you know, if he thought that they were just literally saying something that wasn't there, he would say, well, that's not mentioned. You know, so, you know, there was conversations he had with Muslims when he was in Iran, I think it was, or something, with Aitreya Rishi, his disciple. And he was talking with the Muslim. And, you know, the Muslim was saying this, that and the other, and Prabhupada said, no, that's not the teaching. And when he talked, you know, so he corrected him. And, you know, the argument went on a bit. Prabhupada wasn't going to have it. So, you know, like, we can have discussion, but it has to actually be, you know, what's properly there. You know, when the Christians say, thou shalt not kill, or thou shalt not murder, oh, no, that's not there. It's thou shalt not kill. You know, so he, so there's no discussion to accept what's actually in there. As thou shalt not kill. You're saying thou shalt not murder. That's not there. So, you know, let us discuss the Bible. Okay, what does it actually say? It says thou shalt not kill. So from our standpoint, and so it's nice that devotees are writing books about what is, actually is in the Quran, what is in the you know, Bible, what is in, you know, the teachings of Buddha. We see quite often what is in the teachings of Patanjali. You know, the yogis say this, that and the other. And Prabhupada quotes many verses from Patanjali, you know, even in the sixth chapter of the Gita, you know, about, you know, samadhi and ananda and bliss and things, you know. This is what he actually said. You're saying something else, but this is what patterns. So, you know, if we discuss things, you know, we won't accept when they're actually, what do you say, misinterpreting, misquoting, you know. And a devotee doesn't have to, you know, like when you study bhakti, you may not have read everything in the Quran, but you can bet your bottom dollar that Allah wants them to love Him and engage in His service, and considers that sense gratification to the body is not engagement in His service, but engagement, you know, but is the opposite, sense gratification. You can guarantee you'll find that Quran. So, you know, we don't have to be a scholar of the Quran. We may not know. So, you know, if you just discuss on that principle, they'll start telling yourself, well, actually, you know, when you say that, yes, he did say that, you know, now that I come to think of it. Oh, so where does raping, you know, women come into that? Well, you know, sort of borderline, isn't it, you know? So, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a scholar, but if you want, there's a lot of Vaishnava books by the grace of Krishna where you can actually look at their philosophy, and then, you know, if that's your forte, you know, you can speak about that. But if you understand the Bhagavad, what it was said here, it said previously that Prahlad Maharaj said somewhere, you know, back in verse 25, right? Let's go back. Well, that's a lot of pages to go back. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. If you understand bhakti, you've got complete knowledge. And therefore, even if you haven't read, you know, exactly what's in, you know, the Bible and so many different things, we understand that God is a person. Everyone in this world is a servant of God. That we understand. And the Supreme Lord is trying to engage us in that service to help us go back to the spiritual world. But that's the eternal activity. You know everything. And that is where the Quran is trying to bring them, the Bible is trying to bring them. You know, even you know, the Patanjali and Buddhism, you know, it's all, you know, when we talk about Buddhism, yes, Buddha took the Vedas off them because they're misusing it. Sankaracharya brought it back to them, taught them impersonalism, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave them Bhagavad Bhakti. It's all leading to the same thing. So the devotee knows everything, and therefore you can discuss with anyone, any of the scholars and pundits, because, you know, no one can argue that point. I mean, if someone who's a religious person says, oh no, God's not trying to make me a pure servant, that's nowhere in my scriptures. You know, sense gratification is a goal, it's there in the Quran. You know, it's not going to happen. And if they do say that, you're talking to a rascal. Walk away, find someone else to preach to before they attack you. So, yeah. Any questions or comments on that? No? Just enjoying the show. So, Okay. All right. So after Prahlad, this is text 33, Maharaj had spoken in this way and became silent. Hiranyakashipu, blinded by anger, threw him off his lap and onto the ground. Indignant and angry, his reddish eyes like molten copper, Hiranyakashipu said to his servants, "O demons, take this boy away from me. He deserves to be killed. Kill him as soon as possible. This boy, Prahlad, is the killer of my brother, for he has given up his family to engage in the devotional service of the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant." Although Prahlad is only 5 years old, even at this young age, he has given up his affectionate relationship with his father and mother. Therefore, he is certainly untrustworthy. Indeed, it is not at all believable that he will behave well toward Vishnu. Although a medicinal herb born in the forest does not belong to the same category as a man, if beneficial, it is kept very carefully. Similarly, if someone outside one's family is favourable, he should be given protection like a son. On the other hand, if a limb of one's body is poisoned by disease, it must be amputated so that the rest of the body may live happily. Similarly, even one's own son, if unfavourable, must be rejected, although born of one's own body. And Prabhupada actually gives the proper understanding of this, and that's why, you know, devotees sometimes avoid certain family members if they're inimical to Krishna. Just as uncontrolled senses are the enemies of all yogis engaged in advancing his spiritual life. See, look, he's a demon, and he's just saying what I just said, that all yogis, uncontrolled senses are the enemies of all yogis, you know, all religionists, engaged in advancing. It's such basic knowledge that even a demon knows it. And yet the scholars, if a scholar of, you know, some religion doesn't know it, and even a demon knows the basic points, and there's something very wrong there. This Prahlad, who appears to be a friend, is an enemy because I cannot control him. Therefore, this enemy, whether eating, sitting or sleeping, must be killed by all means. The demons, Rakshasas, the servants of Hiranyakashipu, thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlad Maharaja's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth and reddish, coppery beards and hair. They appeared extremely threatening. Any redheads in the class? No offense. Making a tumultuous sound, shouting, "Chop him up! Pierce him!" They began striking Prahlad Maharaj, who sat silently meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. Thus, the weapons of the demons had no tangible effects upon Prahlad Maharaj because he was a devotee undisturbed by material conditions. And fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchangeable, who cannot be realized by the material senses, and who is the soul of the entire universe. So this is interesting because, you know, the effects of those persons had no result on Prahlad, and by way of offering evidence, they glorify the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you can't have any effect on him. And here it describes there have been many attempts by demons to hurt or kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he cannot be injured by any material means. That's in the purport there. Because he is always transcendental. The demons, the Rakshasas, can neither see nor touch the Supreme Lord, although they may superficially think that they are striking the Lord's transcendental body with their material weapons. We cannot understand him to be in a particular place, for he is all pervasive. I was speaking about that the other day, how people find it difficult to understand that the Lord's situated there in the sacred fire. It is all pervasive. It doesn't make sense to them, so they have to explain it. Moreover, he is Akalatma, the active principle of everything, even material weapons. Those who cannot understand the position of the Lord are unfortunate. They may think that they can kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, but all their attempts will be futile. The Lord knows how to deal with them. So, you know, here we see that the devotees are so intimately connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead that they are as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the attempt to kill them, you know, is similar to the attempt to kill the Lord. You know, he's part of the Lord's paraphernalia for transcendental pastimes. My dear King Yudhisthira, with all the attempts of the demons to kill Prahlad Maharaj, when they're all futile, the king of the demons, Hiranyakasipu, became most fearful. Began contriving other means to kill him. Hiranyakasipu could not kill his son by throwing him beneath the feet of big elephants, throwing him among huge, fearful snakes, employing destructive spells, hurling him from the top of a hill, conjuring up illusory tricks, administering poison, starving him, exposing him to severe cold, winds, fire and water, or throwing heavy stones to crush him. When Hiranyakasipu found that he could not in any way harm Prahlad, who was completely sinless, he was in great anxiety as to what to do next. Hiranyakasipu thought, I have used many ill names in chastising this boy Prahlad, and have devised many ways of killing him. But despite all my endeavours, he could not be killed. Indeed, he saved himself by his own powers, without being affected in the least by these treacheries and abominable actions. Although he is very dear to me and is merely a child, he is situated in complete fearlessness. He resembles a dog's curved tail. So that's, I think that's a backhanded compliment, as they say. Which can never be straightened. Because he never forgets my misbehaviour and his connection with his master, Lord Vishnu. So, in different ways, you've seen the purport here that, you know, there's a story there. So, they can't change him. They think they're trying to straighten him out, but he's going to remain that way. He's going to remain his enemy, in other words. I can see that the boy's strength is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity toward him, I shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. He's completely flabbergasted. He's completely combobulated. Thinking this way, the king of the demon, the Daichas, morose and bereft of bodily luster, remained silent with his face downward. Then Sundra and Amarka, the two sons of Sukracharya, spoke to him in secret. And now they're going to try and boost up his spirits. O Lord, we know that when you simply move your eyebrows, all the commanders of the various planets are most afraid. Without the help of any assistant, you have conquered all the three worlds. Therefore, we did not find any reason for you to be morose or full of anxiety. As for Prahlad, he is nothing but a child and cannot be a cause of anxiety. After all, his bad or good qualities have no value. Overstating Hiranyakasipu, understating the you know, Prahlad, very typical behaviour of, say, illogical, irrational people trying to somehow clutch onto straws of hope for sense gratification and success. You know, it's like the story Prabhupada tells about the dying man. The obstinacy of demons is just this, a dog's obstinacy, he calls it. And he said, you know, once, you know, a crow landed on a branch. Someone was cutting the fruit, and as the crow landed and the man was trying to cut the fruit, the apple fell. And so, you know, a couple of people seen this and said, oh, as the crow landed, the fruit fell. And the person, no. You know, actually, he cut the fruit with the scissors and then it fell. Oh, no. And I saw it with my own two eyes, you know, I'm not stupid like some. You know, and they just went on, and they began this big argument. And then he said, look, he said, one more time about the scissors. I'll grab you by the scruff of the neck. I'll throw you in the river and I'll kill you. It was the scissors. So he grabs him, you know, and throws him in the river. He's drowning like this there. You know, now what have you got to say? Prabhupada says, in his last breath, his hand comes up out of the water. As he's going down. Prabhupada says, dog's obstinacy. He's not going to give up in his last breath. So this is Hiranyakasipu, you know, like that. This is their position. It just becomes nonsensical, you know. Upon the return of our spiritual master Sukracharya, until the return of our spiritual master Sukracharya, arrest this child with ropes of Varuna so that he will not flee in fear. In any case, by the time he is somewhat grown up and has assimilated our instructions or served our spiritual master, he will change in his intelligence. Thus, there is no need, be no cause for anxiety. After hearing these instructions of Sundra and Amaka, the sons of his spiritual master, Hiranyakasipu agreed and requested them to instruct Prahlad in that system of occupational duty which is followed by a royal householder family. So again, basically taking bhakti, you know, or even moksha out of the, you know, as not so much as important, but really religion, you know, regulative principles for the sake of sense gratification and economic development and things like that. Thereafter, Sundra and Amaka systematically and unceasingly taught Prahlad Maharaj, who was very submissive and humble, about mundane religion, economic development and sense gratification. You know, so they were teaching him those things, and he just remained submissive and humble. Like that, and again. And as we were discussing before about this Vedic process, this is an important summary of what we discussed before at length. There are four processes of human society: Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha, and they culminate in liberation. Human society must follow a process of religion to advance, and on the basis of religion, one should try to develop his economic condition so that he can fulfill his needs for sense gratification according to religious rules and regulations. Then, liberation from material bondage will be easier to obtain. That is the Vedic process. When one is above the stages of Dharma, Artha, Karma and Moksha, one becomes a devotee. He is then on the platform from which he is guaranteed not to fall again to material existence. As advised in Bhagavad Gita, if one transcends these four processes and is actually liberated, one engages in devotional service. Then he is guaranteed not to fall to material existence. The same point. It all comes to that point of bhakti. All those different things in all the scriptures of the world are eventually meant to bring them to bhakti by this process of religion, economic development, sense gratification in a regulated way, according to rules and regulations. And that actually, gradually, a person... The rules and regulations gradually restrict, the sense gratification, but they have a foundation of knowledge and culture that supports them and society, and then that help. Then they can, on that stronger platform, liberation is acceptable, and then on the platform of liberation, they can even, you know, then accept the process of devotional service. The teachers Sundra and Amaka instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the three kinds of material advancement called religion, economic development and sense gratification. Prahlad, however, being situated above such instructions, did not like them, for such instructions are based on the duality of worldly affairs, which involve one in a materialistic way of life marked by birth, death, old age and disease. And here's where we see. The entire world is interested in the materialistic way of life. Indeed, practically 99.9% of the people in the three worlds are uninterested in liberation or spiritual education. See? So, therefore, that doesn't leave a lot. That means for the majority of people we preach to, we try not to disrupt their rules and regulations according to what's proper and they follow. That is a big part of our preaching. And knowing that that is meant to gradually bring them to a point where devotional service is more and more within their grasp. When the teachers went home to attend the household affairs, the students of the same age as Prahlad would call him to take the opportunity of leisure hours to play. Prahlad Maharaj, who was truly the supreme learned person, then addressed his class friends in a very sweet language. Smiling, he began to teach them about the uselessness of materialistic way of life. Being very kind to them, he instructed them as follows. My dear King Yudhisthira, all the children were very much affectionate and respectful to Prahlad Maharaj, and because of their tender age, they were not so polluted by the instructions and actions of their teachers, who were attached to condemned duality and bodily comfort. Thus the boys surrounded Prahlad Maharaj, giving up their playthings, and sat down to hear him. Their hearts and eyes being fixed upon him, they looked at him with great earnestness. Prahlad Maharaj, although born in a demon family, was an exalted devotee, and he desired their welfare. Thus he began instructing them about the futility of materialistic life. All right, so that ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of 7th Canto, 5th chapter, the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prahlad Maharaj and the Saintly Son of Hiranyakasipu. And next week we will dedicate our class to the 9 processes of devotional service, and we will go back to verse 24-25 of this chapter. Yeah? Jai, all glory to the Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
But I didn't understand that point.
What, which... from starting from listening carefully.
Yeah, you're saying like the Vaishnava songs, they tell you that you have to purify yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to start loving everybody. You chant for.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains that, you know, even saintly persons should never give up charity, austerity, and sacrifices. And in the 17th of the chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he describes, you know, the charity for those in the mode of, you know, gradually should be done in sattva, should be gradually trained to in sattvic. Austerity should be done, you know, in a sattvic way. Sacrifices should be done in a sattvic way. And then he also describes that there are, you know, austerities of the mind, austerities of the body, such as looking after one's superiors, and, you know, and austerities of the words. So, and he explains that those things, they purify even great souls. So, in other words, for one following the regulative principles and not on the platform of bhakti, these things will lead to bhakti. And then for one on the platform of bhakti, Krishna recommends that even saintly persons follow those for the sake of leading other people on the path of religiousness and just trying to add Krishna consciousness to that. So although they're preliminary, it's not as if a devotee gives up welfare activities for other living entities. It's a preliminary activity which helps you to become Krishna conscious, but when you become Krishna conscious, you don't actually give that up, because it's part and parcel of bhakti.
So, first,
and so is humility. In other words, you know, part and parcel of bhakti is that one develops transcendental qualities. So many of the principles that Krishna accepts in the Bhagavad Gita, which are part of Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Astanga Yoga, he selects certain key ones which also can be part of bhakti that may not be given up, like developing humility. That may be good prerequisite for becoming religious, and gradually helps you to But when you become a devotee, it's such an important aspect that when that, you know, on a transcendental platform, that humility is not given up, it's just spiritualized. But it is a very, is one of the principal ingredients of progressing in Krishna consciousness. So it has a twofold effect, helping you on the material platform, helping you to come to Krishna consciousness, and then when the same activity is completely spiritualized, it remains there, but it's an integral part of bhakti.
See, my problem is, that means people who are non-vegetarians, they are not able to chant the holy name properly. So then can they ever come to Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, because they...
Because on one way, they are creating Amsa. So is it still worth it to preach to them? So you tell them, never mind, you chant, things will clear.
If someone can't follow bhakti because they're more attracted to another religious process which may be giving a lot more moral instructions rather than transcendental training and understanding, then we can, you know, encourage them that yes, these principles which are there in your scriptures is very good for you to follow, and not disrupt them, but to encourage them. If they're following something which is basically on a material platform and even for material purposes,
no, see, they are not following any principles. Say they're coming to bhakti viksha classes.
Yeah,
they are not vegetarians, right?
Well, most people follow something.
See, okay, they're coming to, if you ask them.
Yeah.
For example, I can many of there's some areas in certain places like Kobe, Tamil Nadu or Kerala where people are, I believe they take non-vegetarians more, many times a day. Such people are
many times a day. They do what?
They eat meat.
Yeah.
Now, such people come to Bhakti Viksha program.
Yeah.
What is the hope for them?
The hope is to eat prasadam and gradually purify.
Yeah, but then if they say that even to chant the holy name and all that, I mean, you can't really chant properly, you can't say unless you get that. They say Vaishnava, their life starts. That means in the next lifetime only they can. Okay, this
prasadam
will have
an
effect only on the next lifetime.
Maybe next.
No, but they eat the prasadam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's hope.
So it's only in the next lifetime.
No, not necessarily. It depends how much they eat. How often they come.
Okay, we have devotees also. Yeah. So, okay, they may be not eating meat, that's fine. But, being in materialistic, I'm not saying all devotees immediately they are of the higher caliber. We are of all different stages, attempting. That doesn't mean that we have love for everybody. So we are having our own selfish motive, our children are the same and all, and not caring for, say, others. So what is the effect of that? That's going to affect the chanting, obviously.
Well, the point that Krishna makes in the Gita is that where there's an opportunity that they take a step on the path of bhakti, let them do that. So something is natural. They'll come and they'll have prasadam. They might sit and hear, even though they're not necessarily agreeing with everything. They hear the kirtan, they join in, they see the pictures, they sometimes bow down. Oh, that's a lot. You know, if someone, if someone bows down, you know, once in their lifetime, you know, it's actually one of my favourite sections of all the scriptures, Bhakti scriptures, is a section in the Nectar Devotion where it describes the benefits of wearing a garland, smelling the incense. It's like massive, you know. We sometimes we put an unreasonable conception of what it means for us to be a devotee, and then we apply that to them. So we think, for me to be a devotee, I have to have some big position, I have to be doing some big project, I have to open a temple, I'm going to have to write some book. You can hear about Krishna and you can go back to God. And we'll hear about that next week. We're going to, you know, dedicate next week to just... If you hear about Krishna nicely and you spend your life doing that, and you just do that really nice, you'll go back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan in this lifetime. What's that?
See, I should get the taste to hear.
I know you've got a taste. I see you here every week.
No, but if suppose the person, because of sin, does not get the taste for that...
Well, it says in the Bhagavatam itself that it's like sugar candy for jaundice. What happens is that it's sweet in itself. It, as long as you don't have too much, like I did in Vrindavan one time, but if you have the rock candy, it actually cures the illness, and then as you start to taste the sweetness, you crave it. So the Bhagavatam is like that. It in itself, if Krishna sees that someone hears, he works actively within that person's heart. So that person's going about their day, right? And Krishna arranges these circumstances, and then the person's, I was just hearing about this, and now this is happening, and this is, now I see it. Like that. You know, he works within their heart. It's almost like he lights up their path. See? They're just hearing, but Krishna will take that. Okay, I'm just going to reciprocate so much. I have not allowed this person to understand this, but they've heard from my devotee, they've served my devotee by sitting and hearing. By the blessing of, you know, just sitting calmly without interrupting and disturbing the devotee, I'm going to give them so much mercy. And after millions of lifetime, I've been giving forgetfulness, now I will give remembrance. That is the process of hearing itself. It says that in the first canto. And it works.
But then...
The taste will come automatically.
They are... Bhakti Viksha members that we have had one meeting who have stopped coming to the class. And they have taken prasadam at least for 1 year. They just stopped coming.
Yeah. So, Prabhupada mentions... This is why Prabhupada went to America. Because... And he quoted... He wrote a letter to someone that when the medical, persons get out on the field of war or, you know, crisis, although they're equal to everyone, they treat the most hopeful first. Someone, you know, that if they're going to spend their time on someone who's going to die anyway, and then someone who is hopeful dies, they both die, that's no good. So... Although they're equal to everyone, but where there's more hope, they have to take advantage of that first. That's just common sense. See, but they're equal to everyone. They're no favourites. People go, fine. But, you know, those who stay, they're very hopeful. You know, so then, you know, we give the opportunity and others will come. And so many will come and so many will go. But, you know, the most hopeful ones... they were just taken, they become completely cured. But to lose them by giving up, you know, being disappointed by not having success with the hopeless, that's even on a material platform, we don't do that.
And then again, there are devotees who fall away from devotional service. So then, is it that it is one of the things is because of the two things, one is pride and hurting other devotees or other living entities even, if that those two are powerful things for people to...
Well, look,
okay,
you know,
even getting, say, after being so austere and, you know, chaste or whatever, so is that, so even for devotees, it's not that we can become complacent and say that.
Mm.
Okay, so we also have to be cautious that when in the Vaishnava songs they say that Bhakti, you know, Thakur is saying, I should love everybody, then only I can take to chanting. That's a warning for us too.
Mm. So, you know, in this war against the material energy, you know, some will fall. You know, the material energy will, you know, take them back.
But again, there is no loss or diminution, so...
No, there's no loss of diminution.
Yeah.
True,
that's
but we don't want to, again, we want to avoid that pitfall.
Well, we want to make effort to avoid it, but we can't really avoid it. It's up to
the... Yeah, we can only make the effort from our...
Devotional service is an individual choice.
Yeah, because always we keep saying that for chanting, there's no qualification. Just chant. It will purify you. That's my whole question. See, chanting is supposed to develop, I thought, those qualities of humility. And when you really chant well, then you develop love for others.
Mm.
But it seems to be a prerequisite. That is what my question is now here.
Mm.
See, I understand it being a vicious circle. That, okay, you chant a little bit, so you start developing those qualities. Then you develop the qualities, so you can chant a little better. And then you develop those qualities. That vicious circle I can understand. But if you're saying it as a prerequisite, that's where I'm.
Well, if the prerequisite, as Prabhupada mentions, you know, if the prerequisite is not there, but there's an inclination for bhakti, then they can go directly to that. Now, that's how I read that in that verse 26 of the third chapter. Prabhupada says very clearly that and some of the things mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, but he says that although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities. Right, so we may be encouraging them that, you know, humility is good. If you're practicing that in your previous life before you've come to these meetings, that's good. Keep doing that, it's helpful. Or you're not practicing at all. You know, you've never practiced humility. But still, a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of the Lord without waiting for other Vedic formula. Oh, there's no, you're not practicing humility. There's no prerequisite there. That's okay. You know, you've somehow got a little faith in bhakti. Oh, forget about developing the humility. Just chant with us and what have you. I don't. So it's not that, you know, if These Vedic, this Vedic process, Dharma, Artha, you know, Gama, Moksha, they're helpful in preparing, a soul that when the opportunity for bhakti is presented to them, they're hopeful people. That previous background of piety and sinlessness makes them more hopeful. They're more healthy, in one sense, even though it's material. It's and therefore, when the opportunity to give them bhakti comes, they may. Take to it. So it's a very slow process, which gives some hope that this spirit soul coming close to bhakti may take it. And, you know, if you apply that formula to millions and millions of spirit souls, it tends to produce good results. Right? But it's not a guarantee. There's no guarantee that a person can do that and then take to bhakti. They may never take to bhakti, but you know, it's not a guarantee. You do that, you'll become a devotee. No. You can do all of that, but there's no guarantee that person will become a devotee, but they've got a better chance than others. So it's something like, you know, if you say to someone, you know, about 20 miles down the road there, you're in a desert situation here, but 20 miles down the road there, there's some trees and water and you know, something so much nicer than where you are now. Oh, I don't believe that. They're complete ignorance. All right, well, here, I'll make a bit of a ladder. So they climb up the ladder. Oh, no, no, you know, climb a little higher so they get to the vantage point and they see. Yes, I do say some trees there, but I can't guarantee. How do you know there's water there? Well, where there's trees, there's water. You know, well, you know, it's starting to make sense now. You know, it's a bit vague, but yeah, okay. So they actually have a vantage point to. Then they've still got to go to that place, right? From there, you know. So, you know, coming up the ladder of the modes of material nature gives them a vantage point, a jumping off point, which is more, you know, helpful. But someone at the bottom of the ladder who can't even see the trees, say, look, I'm not going to bother up the ladder, getting up the ladder. If I have to go that way anyway, I'm just going to go there, forget the ladder, I might as well go. Why waste my energy? And they may get the result and the person at the top doesn't. So there's no guarantee, but it's helpful. Sometimes you can get a vague, you know, coming to sattva, you know, if you, what happens, you come to sattva, a person realises that, yeah, I think I'm eternal. You follow religious principles, and within all the religious principles, I'm getting this sense that I'm eternal. If I'm eternal, then why shouldn't there be another eternal that's, you know, the supreme, who's controlling things, you know? So, you know, their knowledge is helpful, you know, okay, you know, I've got some knowledge which seems to... A person in Tamaguna, oh, there's no spiritual. There's body, that's it, finish. Then how do you talk about bhakti? They can't even understand their spirit soul. So, you know, these things are very helpful to them. But, you know, a person who doesn't come to sattvic level of religious principles with humility and good qualities and so many things like that, and a tamasic person who's just suffering and is hopeless and says, oh, look, whatever you got to, you know, anything is better than where I am now. I don't even know if I believe you, but it's better than the suffering I'm in now. I'm coming, you know, take me there. I don't really believe, but, you know. And the person in sattva, you know, may get attached to, you know, because they follow religious principles and think, well, gee, my material, you know, position has improved a lot, so, you know, I just want to stay here. So, you know, generally it's helpful in many ways, but it's no guarantee. And a person can come from the lowest modes of material nature, even an elephant or crocodile, and they can actually become Krishna.
That's why when we say that devotee association, that's another strong siddha. After all, bhakti starts from devotee association. That's always the starting point. It's given. We can't by ourselves get it. So somehow we get a sukriti or
yeah.
Samasi somewhere. That's our starting point.
That's right. Yeah, but yeah, the association of devotee.
The association of devotee.
But within... A person who is accustomed to follow religious principles is generally respectful to a saintly person. And that's their advantage. That's the big advantage. That when they don't see that a devotee is someone special. They just see it as sadhu. Like Prabhupada's father, he used to invite anyone, you come in, even you want marijuana to smoke down the banks of the Ganges, come in, I'll get, and he would supply the marijuana, all sorts of things. They're all equal, all sadhus. But the benefit is that sometimes amongst them, some genuine, very advanced devotees who bless you, and they can give bhakti, and they're respectful to them, you know. So that's the advantage. Whereas a person with no, you know, pious background who's inimical to sadhus, that you are the very cause of holding back the material advancement of this world with all your religious hocus pocus and nonsense.
Then
you know, a dungeon of, you know, was it Nehru, you know, it said, you know, the temples are a dungeon for accumulating money that's meant for the society benefit. And
this is exactly what you're reading about in the Bible. This is exactly what's the mentality of
Mahavir. We could be here. Next time, bring a pillar. Yeah, go on.
We could be like, there was a person who had the same mentality. And
she said she is sending to the new image. So maybe you can share. Sorry,
Mahavir. No, that's fine. Yeah, go on.
There's a person who had the same mentality that you were talking about earlier. And in fact, when the Mataji, this is recorded in the ISKCON, went to preach to him and gave him books and all. She got into the train. He thrashed her and threw her and the books out onto the platform. He thrashed her. And she went to give a Bhagavad Gita, but some of the Bhagavad Gita was still with him. And in fact, that Mataji, she got severely injured. She had developed some back pains and she was severely injured. And he, within a short time, all his family members died. And he was so desperate that he couldn't do his job, and so he lost his job. He was on the streets. And he had that Bhagavad Gita in his hand. And at that time, he started reading it. He became a devotee. And he then started searching for that Mataji. How do you explain that?
Yeah, well, that's that, there you go. When, as I said, that, you know, if someone, so, you know, he kept that Bhagavad Gita. That's strange. He's committed an offence. So what has happened is that, you know, when he started hearing, reading the Gita, Prabhupada's book, I mean, he obviously didn't tear the book. It was funny, he threw the devotee out the train, but he kept the book intact. Krishna must have thought, well, you know, there's some service there. You could have ripped the book out up and thrown it out the train as well, but you've kept it intact. He saw Krishna seeing something. And, you know, he's therefore rewarded him by killing all his family members and making him lose his job and destroying his entire life as a reward.
Isn't that
so that he could read the book that he kept.
Isn't that the special mercy of Krishna that he makes him completely dependent on him?
Yeah, he could have just...
So that sort of mercy you...
He could have... See, Krishna inspired him. Krishna tricked him because he could have inspired him to throw the book out, and then he would have killed his family anyway and lost his job, and he'd have no Gita to read. Krishna, you know... So, you know, Krishna's inspired him somehow or another, you know, to keep that book. There's something from a past life where that, you know... that's what you call a gyata sukriti, that unknowingly or unwillingly somewhere he has performed some activity to a sadhu without knowing the person is a sadhu. You might have thought, you know, some might have come across a devotee and the devotee's, you know, got a wig on like we used to have, and he's just done something, you know, he's helped them out, and you know, sometimes they just help you out, like, you know, I know sometimes just people haven't known I've been a devotee, but I've been in some difficult situation and they've just literally come out of the crowd and just helped me. And I know that, you know, although I'm not much of a devotee, that, you know, Krishna is very kind, and, you know, he will see that that person, you know, has done some devotional service. But they don't even know it, you know, that we're a devotee. So somewhere, you know, that is there. Gyata's creed, and Krishna has rewarded that, and this shows you how much hope there is in giving people Krishna consciousness, because in this lifetime, if they come and even they leave and they're angry and so many things, but whatever they have, as you know, Dhruva said, that benefit is eternal. And at some stage, Krishna will give them the opportunity that, okay, you've done something. In your past life, you went to Nirmala's class, you sat there, you ate a prasadam, and then you stormed out and slammed the door. But for what you did, I give you this benediction, this opportunity, and to start, you know. So, therefore, we're never hopeless, always hopeful, you know. Never goes in vain. So something he has done has not gone in vain. The fact that he, you know, when you're so angry, someone gives you a gita, you throw the devotee out, but you keep the book. What is that? You know, that's a trick, isn't it? There's something there. Why did he do that? It's obviously Krishna had, you know, Krishna's, you know, inspired him from something in the past. He could have just killed his family and everything like that and not given the book. Now, somewhere in the past, I'll make an arrangement that you only, you know, you can keep that book. You don't throw it out. I'll give you that intelligence. And then he's taken everything away and all he's got is a book. You know, so, you know, there's something in the past. It's a very unusual circumstance for him not to throw that book out, not to throw it on the ground, not to leave it on the train. He's so angry at getting that book. Why did he just leave it there? There's something in the past. And that's, you know, and that's why any little devotional service that they do, that sort of thing may happen. Something. They will get punished for any rudeness or offences, but apart from that, that punishment will be in the way of also helping them to take advantage of the opportunity Krishna is going to give them for devotional service. So there is no loss or diminution. Yeah, look at Hiranyakashipu. He wanted to kill Prahlad Maharaj. And he ended up... You know, Prahlad Maharaj... you know,
on that note, many people have... Maybe they're still... I mean, they're left. But actually, in fact, I was after my Prabhu. You know, you stop giving these classes. It's of no use. It's just a thing. I will tell you. And I stopped after there was one incident. There was one person who stopped eating meat and is trying to, take to pure bhakti because he started chanting. He was a person, he's one of the people in Kerala who used to eat meat morning, after evening. He gave it up. In fact, some people said that it is impossible for him to give it up because in their family, they eat meat so many times in one day.
Yes, so that's what we're saying, that Krishna, when something, you know, like a lot of people, you know, Hindus don't eat meat. So they get that credit for Krishna. But he'll get more credit for being an addicted meat eater and giving it up. Krishna will say, that now that's hard. That's special. Not that you, meat eater, okay, you've given it up, you know, you give a little bit of credit. You know, I've got so many people who don't eat meat at all. You know, they're better than you. No, you are better than them.
Yeah, and after that...
You know, that is Krishna.
I stopped talking to him. I said, I'm sorry, I take back what I said. One person else. No, but the people who have at least heard, they will have some benefit, though they have given up.
Yeah.
They will have some benefit.
Oh, they'll have eternal benefit. And... That benefit is so powerful that basically if they take birth, if they eat prasadam, you know, the minimum, if something doesn't happen, next life they take birth where they have the opportunity to associate devotees and become devotees. And then they'll eat more prasadam and be the Gita. You know, a few lifetimes they'll basically be a devotee. And a few lifetimes after that they'll be going back to Godhead. So, I mean, that's pretty rapid when you consider that after billions of lifetimes... in the material world, and all of a sudden some little incident with the devotee and a half a dozen lives and they're going back to Godhead, that's pretty special. But you won't get your name read out in the temple room for your preaching. That's a problem, because it'll take so many lifetimes.
Humility. The name being read out, there is not the
preaching. There we come back to humility. That's why it's so important. Because it helps us to keep preaching. tolerance and humility.
Can't be appreciated. The name being read out there would be a problem because we may become proud.
Yeah, that's right. Hare Krishna.